What's ahead for our property markets? It's hard to make predictions, especially about the future. It's even harder to predict the end point of a moving target. Yet there is a palpable change in property sentiment happening. Earlier this year, there were a number of dire predictions suggesting property values would plummet. But now, most of the property pessimists have changed their minds. They've backtracked on their forecasts. Australia's survived coronavirus better than many countries, and despite falling into recession, despite our rising unemployment, and not even to mention Melbourne's severe prolonged lockdowns, our property markets have remained resilient, haven't they? More recently, there have been two significant game changes that have altered my views on what's going to be ahead for our property markets for 2021 and 2022. And that's what I'm going to discuss in today's episode of the Michael Yardley podcast. But it's actually going to be the audio of a masterclass that I recently conducted. Now, if you watched the video masterclass a week or two ago, please listen to this show again because it was so long and so many gems, I hope, I believe, well, people told me because they got great feedback, that I think you're going to get a lot listening to it again. But while thousands of people watched the masterclass, every month almost 100,000 people download this podcast, so I wanted you to have the opportunity of hearing my thoughts about the major game changes ahead, about why I believe there's a perfect storm forming that's going to be significantly affecting our property markets in the second half of 2021 and 22, and I'm also going to explain why I think we're going to have a two-tier property market, plus a lot more. A slightly longer session, as this is an audio of part of the masterclass, not the whole lot. So I'm going to leave a link in the show notes so you can watch the whole video if you want to. But in the meantime, welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yardney podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropol, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
So let's start off with what's really happening in our property markets at the moment. And it's not really what the media is telling you. There's lots of fake news out there, unfortunately. You don't have to go back that far just to March this year, and you're going to find many economists suggested Australia's property markets were going to plummet. Some made predictions of a drop of 10% in value. Others had more dire predictions of a 20%, even 30% drop in value. Of course, that didn't happen. Now, our property markets weren't immune to the coronavirus, but the impact has been minimal so far. And as you're going to find out later on in this session, I'm going to suggest that certain segments of our property markets have already hit the bottom and other segments of the market will fall a bit further. So I'm going to show you which areas to avoid. The overall figures in this chart don't show the pain being felt in certain segments of the property market because there isn't just one property market. Now, I'm going to be sharing with you the reasons, though, that I believe we're setting ourselves up for a perfect storm in property in 2021 and 2022. But let me be clear, certain segments of our property markets are still going to continue to suffer significantly, and we're going to have a two-speed property market moving forward. The thing is, there isn't one property market. Way back in March, I wrote that A-class properties are not going to fall much in value during this pandemic. I suggested they may drop 5% in value, and I was correct. And I also suggested that B-grade properties, not investment-grade properties, not A-grade homes, but ones with some deficiencies, not in the best positions, would drop 5 to 10%. And that was pretty right also. And I also suggested C-class properties wouldn't be selling at all, and we're finding a fallout in the off-the-plan market and the inner apartment market at the moment, aren't we? So while the media loved to share headlines of doom with us, it was only certain segments of the property market that suffered. And that's what we're finding on the ground at the moment. Part of the reason I managed to get those forecasts right is because I've lived through multiple property cycles. There are very few people out in the marketplace giving advice who've invested for close to 50 years. But not only me, but members of my team at Metropole have got grey hair and some have got no hair. And we've been in the property market for many cycles. And I've got my own teams on the ground in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane and a significant research division. And we personally are investors and we've had clients who've been with us 5, 10, 15, 20 years who have built very substantial property portfolios as well. So we know what's happening on the ground from multiple perspectives because we have a wealth advisory arm, a financial planning arm, renovations, development, property management. So that's the sort of perspective that money can't buy. But we know what's going on. We know what's happened in previous cycles. As you can see from this chart, after every economic shock, the property markets rebounded considerably. Now, I don't know if you've noticed, but most of the property pessimists have changed their mind. Why were they all wrong? Well, in fact, why have they become more positive about property at the moment? Now, I'm not talking about the usual band of negative Nellies out there on the internet because they still see property prices are going to fall. But I'm talking about the credible economists who suggested property values could drop 20 to 30%. Despite Australia being in a recession, despite unemployment rising, despite, unfortunately, tragically, many businesses struggling, property values have declined only in a very mild way, and it's becoming increasingly clear that this modest coronavirus-induced housing correction is coming to an end. Let me give you four quick reasons why this would occur. Firstly, house prices rise quickly, but slide slowly. And it's not like the share market. The property market isn't volatile like the share market, and a lot of the economists forget that. During booms, property values tend to rise quickly because properties are snapped up as soon as they come on the market. During those good times, there's more buyers than sellers. It's the old supply and demand ratio. However, when buy demand falls, potential sellers don't just drop their prices and lower the value of their properties and sell them quickly. What they do is they hold on, they dig in, they wait for a buyer to turn up. The first sign of a market slowdown isn't dropping property values. It's not a decline in prices. It's really more just slower turnover of properties, more properties on the market listed for sale. It takes longer for them to sell. But a lot of discretionary sellers are just taking their properties off the market at the moment. And the second reason the pessimists were wrong was there were very few forced sellers at the moment because the government encouraged the banks to support homeowners, to support investors, those struggling financially, and they threw them a lifeline. And a lot of those people who have deferred their payments have actually now taken up repaying their loans again. So don't worry about the banks pulling away support very quickly. Think about it. They don't want to take away your home and become a mortgagee in possession. They're keen to help their customers through these challenging times. Obviously, it's in nobody's interest to see a large number of mortgagee sales and house prices tumbling. The third reason house prices haven't tumbled like the pessimists thought they may is because there's actually been tenants, renters, who've been harder hit than homeowners. Unemployment around Australia is high, and it's likely to increase for a while, but it's tending to hit the youngest people hardest, people who work in hospitality, in tourism. So the rental market, especially in Melbourne and Sydney, especially the inner city markets, has been the hardest hit. And the fourth reason property values haven't crashed yet because we're not all in the same boat. Not in everyone in Australia is struggling. We may be in the same ocean, but we're not in the same boat. Sure, unemployment is high, but 80% of Australians, more, still have a secure job. And despite the recession, we're working our way through as some parts of our economy are doing well. Sure, they're being supported by government and home builder and job keeper and job seeker. And there's no doubt this economic shock has made many of us nervous. More Australians are stashing their cash and households are currently saving nearly 20% of their disposable income. This compares to about 6% in the first quarter of 2020. So there are a number of factors that have supported the market up to now, and now I believe the market is starting to rise. So what's ahead for our property market? Well, I believe there's too many vested interests in our property market to allow them to collapse. Our banking sector, as I said, is underpinned by residential real estate. The banks aren't going to pull out the rugs from under you. But at the same time, the government understands the importance of consumer confidence. It's going to want to haul us out of this recession and into recovery by consumers being comfortable and confident. And it's enormously helpful if the wealth effect of their houses rising in value continues, because that increases consumer confidence and consumer spending. At the same time, there's pent-up demand from both buyers and sellers who are just waiting for somebody to ring the bell and tell them it's all over, meaning as confidence gradually returns to the property market, there'll be a rebound. This will be helped by historically low interest rates and various government stimulus packages to revive our economy. But then, recently, two game changers have occurred that has changed my opinion of what's going to happen moving forward in our property market. So while I was always positive that our property markets were going to pick up, recently, two major factors, game changers in my words, have actually underpinned the property markets. And that, together with a whole lot of other factors that I'm going to discuss, are going to create a perfect storm. They're all going to come together, and in the second half of 2021 and in 2022, our property markets are going to perform very strongly. The first one was when Treasurer Josh Frydenberg announced sweeping changes to remove overly restrictive, responsible lending rules. His goal is to make borrowing easier, to make it more efficient for everyday Australians. He wants to boost credit and stimulate the economy. You see, if people sit in fear at home, saving every penny for a rainy day, and we know how rainy things can get, don't we? Then the economy stalls even further. People would spend less in cafes and restaurants and shops, further jobs would be lost, and the recession would only deepen. The government wants to avoid this type of situation at all costs. So what they're going to do is encourage people and businesses to spend and to borrow. And one of the most effective ways of kickstarting the economy is getting consumers to spend more. So these responsible lending restrictions, regulations, well, they first came in, they were introduced in 2009 after the global financial crisis, when lending became tight because of some irresponsible lending criteria, but that became even tighter after the Haines Royal Commission in 2009. Now Treasurer Frydenberg is winding back some of the rules and regulations that were implemented then and putting the onus on the responsibility on the borrower rather than the banks, because he doesn't want to slow down our economic recovery. Now, many people, including me, believe the restrictions imposed by the government and by ASIC went too far. Banks were too risk averse, and that had a negative impact on our economy. So what the Treasurer's changes mean, in March next year, he's going to simplify Australia's credit framework to ensure consumers and small businesses get timely access to credit. So as a property investor or a homeowner, what does this mean to you? Firstly, it means you're likely to be able to borrow more money or have an easier time being approved to get your loan in the months ahead. In return, there'll be an onus on borrowers to declare complete and accurate information, as the responsibility is now going to fall on borrowers to show they can service their loans. It means the banks won't be checking to see if you're ordering Uber Eats or online shopping. Of course, it doesn't mean everyone's going to be able to get a loan. You're still going to need to be able to show you can service your debts. But the banks are going to look at serviceability criteria less strictly, in particular with regard to discretionary spending. Now, any of these changes won't come into effect until the second quarter of next year. But it's been estimated that it could increase the average person's borrowing capacity by 20%. Easier availability of credit is going to flow in through the system and push up property values. Thinking strategically, it means there's going to be a window of opportunity now and in the first quarter of 2021 for savvy investors to amplify their wealth position by getting in the market before the rush occurs after the easier lending criteria come in. So if you've got a secure job and you've got access to finance, getting an investment property at this stage would make some sense. But not every property is going to go up in value, and I'm going to explain the sort of properties that I believe you should be looking at in a moment's time. Now, the other big game changer was the budget. While the federal budget had a number of measures that are going to help our property market, including the extension of the First Home Loan Deposit Scheme, an additional low-cost financing for affordable housing, and there was that funny suggestion about allowing capital gains tax exemption for granny flats. The main reason I feel the budget's going to benefit our housing market is the fact that it'll create jobs. It'll increase consumer confidence and business confidence. And that's critical for the success of our property markets. People don't make big buying decisions like buying a home or an investment property if they don't feel financially secure and stable. So they are the two big game changers that have changed my opinion of how strong our property market is going to recover. But as I said, I believe that together with a number of other factors are going to lead to a perfect storm arising in the second half of 2021 to boost our property markets strongly. Now, I've mentioned A Perfect Storm a couple of times. What do I mean by that? Well, I think I got the name from that movie, A Perfect Storm, where there was a confluence of a whole lot of factors together that created an event. And I see there'll be a perfect storm for strong property growth in the second half of 2021 with the confluence of a number of factors. First of all, the federal government spending, their initiatives and their infrastructure projects. There's also going to be state government spending and initiatives and infrastructure projects. Very important is going to be historically low interest rates, making borrowing as cheap as it's ever been, and therefore the ability to hold investment properties or take out a home loan more affordable than ever. The other big factor, though, is the security that interest rates are going to remain low for a long time. In other words, people are not going to worry that interest rates are going to go up and they could get caught out. That'll encourage more people to borrow. Of course, as I've said, easier credit approval is going to mean people are going to be able to borrow significantly more than they could before. And in due course, there's going to be a return of international demand for Australian property. A lot of people have recognised that Australia is the lucky country, and a lot of foreigners are going to want to invest in Australia, just like they did before, and there's even more reasons to today. And even more so, there's going to be a return of immigration and students to Australia. Sure, immigration is going to be slow for a while, but one of the best ways the government can get our economy up and running quickly is to bring more people in who are going to work, pay taxes, buy goods. What about the lack of immigration? How's that going to affect property? Well, it's been suggested that between now and 2030, we're going to have 1 million less people coming to Australia. You may have heard on my podcast with Simon Kirstenmacher where he predicted there was a missing million people. But currently, we've got 25.5 million people, and we were looking to get to 30 million people by 2030. Hey, we may only get to 29 million people. But all those other 3.5, 4 million people have to live somewhere, and that's going to underpin our property markets again. So population growth is going to rebound, low interest rates, all those other factors are going to create a perfect storm. But there is a window of opportunity to get in beforehand. And if you're in a secure financial position, my recommendation is to get some holistic advice and make sure that you own the right sort of property so that when the market moves, you'll be well positioned. Well, if our property markets are going to perform well, how are you going to take advantage of those to become a successful property investor? Because history suggests that most property investors fail. The majority of property investors never get past their first or second property. Recently, we did some research at Metropol and had a look at how many investment properties the average property investor owns, and the tax office gives those statistics. And 92% of investors never get past their first or second property. Of the 2.1 million property investors in Australia, 21,000 own six or more properties. Then we dug into our statistics at Metropol to see how our client base, because we're looking after $2 billion worth of assets for clients, so we know how many properties they own and how they're performing. And we've seen that we outperform three or four times the average in how many properties our clients own and how they're doing to get to their financial freedom. So how are you going to outperform the property markets? So I'm going to give you some clues about that now. And the first one to understand is that we're moving to a period where we're going to have a two-tier property market. One of the things I've noticed during all economic downturns is that some people are more affected than others. Some people are doing well at the moment and others are not. In general, the rich keep getting richer during these times, and the average Australian and the poor are suffering more. Now, I'm not suggesting this is fair. I'm not going to get into a social commentary. However, the fact is that in general, high income earners have avoided a lot of the financial pain created by COVID-19, and they're going to benefit from the lower interest rates more than the average Australian. And the predominant reason is that, unfortunately, COVID-19 has had a much greater adverse effect on lower income earners. Lower income earners tend to work in occupations that don't lend themselves to working from home. In addition, industries such as hospitality, travel, tourism have been most severely affected. At the other end of the spectrum, a high proportion of middle and high income earners, they're likely to recover their income back much quicker, and many of them haven't been hit hard at all by COVID-19. So there's a lot of Australians who are in a much stronger financial position today than they were a year or two ago. Apparently $68 billion is spent every year on travel overseas and locally, and that hasn't been happening. So a lot of people are saving. In fact, Australia's saving ratio is up much higher than it's been for a long time. And a large chunk of that income that would normally be spent on travel, domestic and international, is now going to be diverted elsewhere, and that underpins a lot of our economy, our retailers, and also property in 2021. It's suggested that 85% of the funds previously spent on travel have somehow or other got to get into our economy. Many of Australians wealthy have got more savings than ever because they're not travelling, so they're going to upgrade their homes, they're going to buy holiday homes, or they're going to invest in residential real estate. Think about it. Where else could you put your money today? You wouldn't put it in the volatile share market, and you don't get any money in the bank. Now, interest rates are going to play a factor too, because in general, people borrowing more are actually going to do better with low interest rates. Let me explain. About a decade ago, $1 million mortgage against a nice home or an investment property would have cost somebody around $70,000 in interest a year. At current rates, their annual interest rate bills fall to, I don't know, maybe $25,000 a year. In other words, luxury property, higher-end property, is more affordable than ever. So I've always spoken about the idea of buying in areas where the locals, the demographic, can afford to pay more, because they're the sort of areas where people want to move, aspirational people want to move. And they're the sort of areas that are going to gentrify. So I'd like to spend a couple of minutes explaining the concept of gentrification to you. Now, I'd like to share with you one driver of capital growth that many property investors don't understand or don't get right. And that's the reason many investors are going to miss out again this cycle moving forward. And that's understanding the cycle of the suburb, not just the big general economic and property cycle. And that's because while each state has its own cycle, suburbs have their own cycle. So at Metropole, we look for areas going through gentrification, because these suburbs, they've got their own cycle that's independent of the broader market, and in general have capital growth that outperforms the averages. They're areas that go from ugly ducklings to beautiful swans, and they increase in capital value faster than average. Now, gentrification occurred in the inner, older working class and port suburbs of many of our capital cities in the 1990s and 2000s. Think Port Melbourne or St Kilda in Melbourne, or Balmain or Redfern in Sydney. And within a number of decades, the process of gentrification saw these ugly duckling suburbs transformed into graceful swans as higher income households displaced blue collar workers. They changed the character of the neighbourhood, and this resulted in a significant increase in local property values. Now, that's then. I want to show you where you should invest now to take advantage of gentrification. So let's explain that a little bit more, because gentrification is one of the factors behind the revitalization of the middle ring suburbs of Australians' capital cities at the moment. The word gentrification comes from the Old English word gentry, where more affluent people move into an area. This usually occurs where working class people and tenants and migrants moved out because the land became too valuable, the rents became too high, and more affluent people moved in. And as I said, it happened in the past in the inner ring suburbs as they renovated the old terrace homes and improved the surrounding shops. But many people misunderstand what gentrification really is. Getting an upgrade to the infrastructure or getting a new Coles supermarket or some new shops is not gentrification. While it may improve the suburb in the short term, gentrification is more about people, more affluent people moving into the area. Now, this is not a judge of people. It's not a social argument. The challenge, though, is you need to find areas that are going to outperform the averages if you want to build capital growth and your financial freedom. And that's going to depend upon the people who want to live in the area where you've got your properties, and interestingly, also upon the tenants who want to live in the area as well. Now, what's going to happen moving forward? Australia's population is going to grow significantly, maybe not as much in the next year or two, but the government has got a business plan for Australia, and it wants Australia's current population of 25.5 million to almost double by 2050. More than half of this is going to happen due to immigration. Now, sure, immigration's slowing at the moment, but the government's going to need to boost immigration to help get our economy back on track. Both Melbourne and Sydney have got populations of around 5 million people, and over the next 30 years, they're going to get to 8 million people or so. And while some of these people are going to go to the outer suburbs, more and more infill development is going to happen and gentrification is going to happen in the middle ring suburbs of our established capital cities. This gentrification is going to see a rebirth of the middle ring suburbs of our capital cities. What's happening is the land in these areas is going to become too valuable to house the old properties that are currently there. There's going to be development of new apartments, new townhouses, new homes, medium density development. Now, I'm talking about hotspots, because hotspots tend to be short-term areas of growth. You've got to dig deeper and look for areas of gentrification which give long-term capital growth. And as I said, it's accompanied by more affluent people moving into the area. Now, just to make things clear, just because a suburb's cheap doesn't mean it's destined to become the next growth area. Some suburbs are inexpensive for a reason, and they won't improve because of various socioeconomic factors. There might be too much industry there, there could be a lot of social or public housing, maybe crime, and for many of the outlying suburbs, the infrastructure isn't good enough, the facilities, the public transport isn't good enough. Now, in my book, How to Grow a Multi-Million Dollar Property Portfolio in Your Spare Time, I've actually outlined six stages of gentrification. I don't have time to go through this in the masterclass, but at Metropole, our team have identified suburbs where we see gentrification happening, and we know at what stage of the gentrification clock they are. And the process of gentrification has locked out a lot of younger people from these inner and middle ring suburbs. And moving forward, the gap is only going to widen as, unfortunately, more Australians are going to be locked out of living in these more affluent areas. Now, I haven't got time to discuss the social and political and town planning remedies of this here, but it's the same all over the world. Go to any major city, London, Paris, Vienna, Los Angeles, and you'll find that wealthy people tend to live within 10, 15 minutes drive of the CBD or the water. Why is this so? Well, cynics would say because they can afford to do so. And that's partly true. But the main reason is the rich don't like to commute. And so we're looking for suburbs that are going to gentrify. And as I said, there are six stages of gentrification. And we know that certain stages actually provide more boost of capital growth than others. So what should you look for in a suburb for gentrification? Well, you can drive around and you'll see that there's people renovating their properties, extending their homes. You'll see the sort of cars that are there. There's now the white SUVs. They used to be black rather than old Fords and Holden Utes. Just look at the nature of the shops. They're changing. The gyms will be offering Pilates and the cafes will be selling cold-pressed coffee and the delis will be serving goat's cheese pizza. As a property investor, if you can pick an area going through gentrification, one that's shifting from dreary to in demand, you'll be able to benefit from this accelerated growth. And the good news is you don't have to get your timing perfect because gentrification lasts a number of decades. But as I said a moment ago, you've got to understand at what stage of the gentrification cycle a particular suburb is. And that's what we've spent a lot of time, money, effort and research on at Metropole. By the way, it's not just new owners who are pushing up property values in areas of gentrification. It also has to do with tenant appeal. Many investors don't understand this because your future as a property investor is going to be dependent upon your tenants' income and their ability to pay more rent. There are tenants in Australia who've chosen to become tenants for lifestyle reasons. And there are other tenants who unfortunately remain tenants because they can't afford to buy a property. In the outer suburbs and lower socioeconomic areas, tenants usually rent because they can't afford to buy. And most of these tenants are only 1 or 2 weeks away from being broke. We've noticed that during this challenging economic period, haven't we? This means it's going to be hard to increase your rents in the future. However, in the inner, more affluent lifestyle suburbs, where tenants are also there for lifestyle, they're often having the sort of jobs that are going to be able to afford them the ability to pay higher rent. Now, let me give you an example of one of the last developments Pam and I just completed. Two townhouses in a great gentrifying suburb of Melbourne, and they're big accommodation on compact blocks, modern accommodation, and one of the townhouses was leased to the CEO of an international Japanese electronic company, and he's there because he's only here for 5 years in Australia, and my tenant is actually an international company. The other tenant in the adjoining townhouse is the managing director of a large real estate company, and I wondered, hey, why is this real estate agent, who is very successful, my tenant? Well, interestingly, he just recently divorced and moved in with his new life partner and baby, and so he's renting there for lifestyle reasons. Both these tenants can afford to pay high rents and able to pay rental increases in the future. So choosing suburbs going through gentrifications is one of the strategies I'm going to recommend for you, so you can have properties that outperform the averages and are not going to fluctuate much in value over the property cycle. We've covered a lot. Thank you for sticking with me so far in this masterclass. And I'm now going to try and put it all together for you to give you some clarity of what's ahead. And by putting in some order, putting in some sense, you're going to have some direction as to what to do moving forward. I'm also going to give you some suggestions of some ways you can get more information as well. But what I was trying to show you was that the property markets have been resilient, and now there's signs that we're hovering around the bottom. No one's going to ring a bell telling us that the property market has bottomed, and in some areas they're definitely going to drop further, particularly the new and off-the-plan property areas, the high-rise apartments. And while there will be some home buyers buying some of the new house and land packages, they're going to find that those properties in the outer suburbs are not going to perform as well in the long term as they'd hope. But on the other hand, we're going to have a two-tier market where the more affluent markets are going to move forward. And I've given you the reason why I believe there's going to be a perfect storm moving forward. And there's going to be some areas that are going to do really well. So how are you going to find those areas? Well, I found looking in the rearview mirror doesn't work. You've got to look forward, and you've got to see where there's going to be economic growth. More importantly, where there's going to be jobs growth, but the right sort of jobs growth, where there's going to be higher wages, where jobs are going to bring new people into the area, which is going to require more accommodation. Some of those people may come in initially to rent and then they're going to buy, and that's going to push up property prices. So I want to look forward to see what's going on. And the system that we use at Metropole that's helped many of our clients build substantial property portfolios is what I call my top-down approach, going from the macro to the micro. So we begin with the big picture, the macroeconomic environment. As I explained, I think there's a lot of factors that are going to fall together to create a great property market in the second half of next year. And so there's a window of opportunity in the short term to get in before the rush. Now, having said that, you've got to find the right state in which to invest. One that's going to outperform the Australian market averages because of its economic growth and the population growth. So we spend a lot of time, effort and money at Metropole researching the various states. And then within the state, and we only invest in the capital cities, we don't fight the big trends. Sure, there's growth in regional areas, and some people are going to move there as well. But the bulk of the population growth, the economic growth, the jobs growth, the wages growth is going to be in the capital cities. Then within each state, we look for the suburbs that are going to outperform with regard to capital growth. We recognise that location does 80% of the heavy lifting. And the reason we know that is because some suburbs, over a 10-year period, a decade or two, outperform others by 50%, sometimes 100%. They're the suburbs we target. They're the suburbs we've researched. Often they're gentrifying suburbs. A lot of it has to do with demographics, because these are the areas where owner-occupiers want to live because of lifestyle choices. One where locals are prepared to, but more importantly can afford to pay a premium to live there, because they've got higher disposable income. In general, these are the more affluent inner and middle ring suburbs of our capital cities. So if we're wanting to outperform the markets in the future, we've got to target the right locations, which are going to be influenced by the right owner-occupiers, but also, as I said earlier on, by the right tenants as well. In both cases, people who are prepared to pay a premium to live there, and they're going to be able to do that because they've got higher incomes. Remember, there's going to be a disparity moving forward of those haves and have-nots, and so the gap between the better performing, more affluent suburbs and the average suburb is going to widen. Then we look for the right location within that suburb. Some livable streets will always outperform others, and in those streets, some properties will be more desirable than others. And then within that location, we look for the right property. And finally, then we look at the right price. Now, I'm not suggesting you buy a cheap property. At the moment, A-grade properties are holding their values very well, and there's a shortage of them. So there's always going to be cheap properties around, but there'll be secondary properties. So, I mean, we've got to find the right property at a good price. So how do you know what is the right property? Well, we use another one of our frameworks, my six-stranded strategic approach, and we only buy properties that would appeal to owner-occupiers. We don't think like tenants. We want the right tenants. We've said that before, and we're not planning to sell the property, but what we're looking for are the sort of property where owner-occupiers are going to buy similar properties in that location, pushing up local real estate values. And this will be particularly important in the future as the percentage of investors in the market is likely to be low for a period of time. The second strand is my six-stranded strategic approach is to buy below intrinsic value. That's why we avoid new properties and off-the-plan properties, which come at a premium. We like to buy properties with a high land-to-asset ratio. That doesn't mean we buy large blocks of land, but one where the land component makes up a significant part of the asset value. So in Sydney, apartments are a great way of living, a great form of investment, but they have still a component of land underneath them because of the great location. But that's for the older blocks of established apartments, not the high-rise apartments where you've got 100 or 200 apartments on a small block of land. The fourth strand of my six-stranded strategic approach is, of course, finding that property in the right area that's going to have strong capital growth because of the demographics. The fifth strand is I look for something with a twist, something unique, something special, something a bit different about it, something scarce about the property. And finally, we look for the sort of property where we can manufacture capital growth, maybe through refurbishment, renovations, or redevelopment, rather than waiting for the market to do the heavy lifting, because we're now moving into a period of lower wages growth, lower inflation, lower interest rates. And in that situation, it's likely that in general, capital growth will be lower. So I want to force capital growth. I want to manufacture capital growth by renovations, refurbishment, redevelopment. That's my preferred strategy. Now, following my six-stranded strategic approach, you minimize your risks and you maximize your upside. Each strand represents a way of making money from property, but combining all six strands is a powerful way of putting the odds in your favor. If one strand lets you down, you've got two or three others supporting your property's performance. When you look at it this way, buying a property strategically takes lots of time, lots of effort, lots of research, and something most investors never attain. Perspective. What I mean by this is you can gain lots of knowledge from the internet by reading books or magazines, but you can't gain experience. It takes many years to develop the perspective to understand what makes a great investment property. And that's where I believe my team at Metropole would be able to help you, because our on-the-ground teams, we don't fly in and fly out, our on-the-ground team of buyer's agents are experienced property investors themselves, ex-estate agents, selling agents, so they know the tricks of the trade and they'll level the playing field for you. That's going to give you a huge level of safety in the current economic environment. Now, what you just heard was the audio of part of a masterclass I conducted recently. But I'm going to leave a link to the video, the whole masterclass, so you can listen to the whole of it, or watch the whole lot of it at your leisure. That'll be in the show notes. But if you'd like to fast-track things, if you'd like to get the team at Metropole on your side to level the playing field, if you'd like the safety and security of having a team that gives holistic advice, strategic advice for property investors, why not go to metropole.com.au and leave your details, or give us a call at 1-300-METROPOLE. Now, if you got benefit from this show, please tell somebody about it, because I'd like to help as many people as possible take advantage of the opportunities that the property market's going to show us over the next year or two. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell the world, why not leave a review? Now, MR09876543, hey, that's a good handle, left a great review on Apple Podcasts, and a five-star review where he said, absolute gold. Thank you. Now, by the way, if I read out your review, and this applies to Emma, just email me, michael@metropole.com.au, and I'd love to gift you one of my books. Anyway, Emma said, I'm a first-home buyer that's still waiting to get my loan approval. There's huge confusion about the property markets amongst my friends. Nobody has any idea on what to buy. So I'm grateful I found your podcast. It's absolute gold. I love listening to you while driving. Thank you. Well, thank you for listening, and I hope I've given you some extra direction in this longer session today. I look forward to catching up with you again twice a week for the Michael Yardney podcast. In the meantime, you can catch me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. And have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropol, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropol to help you?